So afterwards, I bring out the durability, which is the secondary thing that we want to talk about, which is also a benefit, which is also SSDs have very low durability compared to HDDs. Reducing the number of cache updates inside the SSD will greatly improve the lifespan of the device.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this is something that we should bring up, right. Especially because if we have comparable latencies, but we're reducing the...
I think here it would be important to acknowledge some of the work that has already been done. And in terms of reducing the writes to the SSD, there's this the clean first LRU is one. CFLRU is one, and then there is this paper that I just saw in, recently in the IEEE Transactions and Computers. Let me see what it was. There's a bunch of papers on avoiding writes, right? There's this paper called WEC, Write Efficient Caching, WEC, Improving Durability of SSD Caches. Frequent Data Updating, right? So there are all these papers that primarily focus on reducing the write traffic to an SSD cache to improve its lifetime. And it would be important to acknowledge those and say, okay, there are people who have done this work. And there needs to be however after that. WEC. WEC, this is IEEE Transactions and Computers. Let me send this to you.
Okay. Shortcomings.
And you need to, this paper will contain references to the other papers that do reduction of writes to SSDs.
Reductions for us, yeah.
To SSD caches.
Yeah.
I think some of those need to come here because one of the challenges when you write introductions is to acknowledge that some work has already been done and this is not new.
Right.
What is new needs to be clear. What are the contributions of this work?
Okay, so in here, okay, I need to add these references.
So you have the first part, which is how the SSD caches are different.
Yes.
Than current caches. Second part is current cache replacement algorithm are not designed for non-data path caches.
Exactly.
And they do updates.
Okay, exactly.
The next part is why is avoiding updates important? Exactly. The cost of an update,
mm-hmm.
Right? And then fourth is, you talk about new algorithms that avoid updates.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yes, I should add a PLC cache here.
PLC cache? What is that? I have heard of that.
We read it.
Yes, what is it? It's in which?
It's the next year MSST.
Next year's MSST?
Yeah.
You mean 15? 2015?
2014.
Previous year, you mean?
Yeah, but Lark is in 12, 13. And
okay.
PLC cache is in the next year.
Okay.
So you gotta ask him for the algorithm and all the. Remember that we talked about that?
Mm-hmm.
So I need to try to see how can I evaluate that because their algorithm is super complicated and it involves. Mm-hmm. Some development in the kernel, but. That's, you know, apart from, it's complicated.
But conceptually, the idea, I think we have to bring it up.
Yes.
Right? And they also avoid updates.
Yes. Right? Yes. So I need to mention PLC cache, and because it's the next, and I also reference Lark, right? So.
Yeah. I think it would then be a good idea to construct the story where we say, why are these SSD caches different? Because they're non-data path caches. Conventional caching algorithms are built for data path caching and they do updates. That's the second piece. third piece is why is reducing the number of updates to an SSD cache important? Okay. Fourth piece is newer caching algorithms that reduce the number of updates, and talk about the properties of those algorithms. Summarize that quickly. Okay. And then the next paragraph needs to say, while there has been a bunch of work on avoiding cache updates, this problem still exists, you know, and there needs, that's the however piece, which is, there's been work there, however, this is the piece that's missing currently, and why is it important?
Split. Description. Short comments. Okay.
The however piece that you have here is kind of very...
I was trying to be general as much as possible, because
the key properties of those caching algorithms is what... the properties of workloads that these caching algorithms do not address comprehensively. I think, you know, something needs to be more concrete here. Right? You say working set changes. I think it would be important to say what you mean by that a little bit more. What does that mean? And why is it that these algorithms do not address working set changes in a little bit more detail? So the first three paragraphs can actually become one paragraph. This last sentence here needs to be a full paragraph.
Okay, the shortcomings have to be a full paragraph. Okay.
So that last one sentence needs to be a full paragraph. These first three can be, first three paragraphs can be just one, and you can quickly get to the point that these SSD caches are new because they are non-DDoS caches. And then you go into the...
But I should make it shorter, right? Or should I?
You should make it shorter. You should make it shorter because, you know, the first piece, you can get rid of this entire paragraph. It doesn't need to be there. Because this is known information. And then you immediately start talking about SSD caches.
Mm.
And then when you bring up the ARC and the conventional caching algorithms, you can say that they are designed for data path caches, such as CPU, L1 and 2, main memory, right, LRU and so on.
Okay.
They are all data path caches.
Okay.
So we don't need to have a background on caching, in general caching. We don't need that.
Right.
That's what the first paragraph does.
Right.
That's true.
Okay.
And then you talk about LARC here, which is, and you say, use the same words as on and off.
Right? Well, that's what they do. I mean, like they...
But do they use on and off?
I mean, the thing is that there's a difference between the on and off that they use and the on and off that we use. So this on and off is the on and off that we describe, like in the granularity of an individual access, you decide whether to cache the page or not.
Hmm.
We are no longer doing that, right? We have different mechanisms to deal with different workloads or we workload with different characteristics, right? And we are classifying these workloads on stable workload, stable with sharding, just stability in general, unique access workloads and things like that.
Okay.
And one of the mechanisms that we use, for example, when we have stability, is this filtering mechanism, which turns on and off cache evictions on the granularity of a page. And that's what LARC does.
Well, I think when you say on and off here, it's a little bit... first of all, these are not the terms that LARC uses, right? So
no.
We have to define what we mean by on and off.
Oh, okay.
And then, so you get into that problem. I think you can make it more, your life more easy by saying that filter accesses and avoid cache updates by filtering some of the items that are accessed. I think using the term filtering here is probably easier to convey the message than on and off. Eventually, you'll talk about filter on and filter off.
Okay.
Which is the key difference between our work and Lark work.
Okay.
Lark doesn't have the ability to turn filter off. It's always on.
Right. Exactly.
So if we say on and off here for Lark, and then we say on and off for the filter later, it becomes confusing.
Right. That's true. So what I can say is I can get rid of this sentence altogether and just say that Lark uses an adaptive selection mechanism to populate the cache according to the pages that have been recently missed in the cache. And this mechanism will make a cache update unless its given page has been accessed recently enough for the mechanism to recognize it might benefit to add it into the cache.
Right. I think you need to use the word filter somehow here so that your introduction is better connected to
the thing is that so when we're talking about filtering, we're talking about giving it, and we have a whole discussion on giving it terms that are formal terms to this, and we talk about selection rather than filtering, but I don't know. That's why I use selection.
So when you say, so selection is replacing filter, you're saying?
Yes, selection is, because selection is decide whether a page or not should be cached.
Mm.
There's a selection process there. And the actual filter is the the list.
Mm-hmm.
So the filter is the list, and the selection is the process of how do you use that list to...
So you're saying you don't want to use the term filter at all in this paper?
I mean, when I explain the in detail what Lark does in the motivation, I should use the filter. So I should say like, okay, so Lark consists in this algorithm that has two LRU lists. One is the actual cache, which contains the data and all this information, and then the other list will just contain its metadata containing information of recently list pages, and this metadata list is going to be used as a filter for the selection and used for the selection mechanism. And how this selection mechanism work? Well, so when a page is first accessed, then you add it to this. If it's not in either of this list, then you add it to this filter. And once it's re-accessed again, then you decide to cache it again. And we explain all this in more detail.
I think the disconnect here is that you're using filter as a noun, and I'm using filter as a verb.
Okay.
So I'm thinking about what Lark does in terms of filtering items from entering into the cache. So it's a high-level description of Lark behavior.
Okay.
To avoid cache updates.
Okay.
So I think using the filter as a noun and a verb is both fine. We just have to be careful in our sentence constructions, that's all. So, and I'm suggesting that here in the introduction, to describe what the basic idea of Lark, you can say that it filters items from entering into the cache based on their importance. Because I think you go into a little bit more detail than you need to when you start describing Lark in the introduction.
Okay.
And similarly, you might have to not just discuss Lark, but also the other caching algorithms like WEC and the PLC cache briefly.
Okay.
And when you do that, then you can't do the same extent of detail as you do with Lark right now. You have to have like a really short summary of what Lark does.
Right. Should it be short for Lark in the sense that Lark is like the main competitor, right? The main algorithm that we're making a comparison of, people need to know how it works. I mean, should I do that in the motivation with more extents?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the motivation needs to go into a little bit more detail, and And I think having a table of related work in the motivation could help bring in other works as well, such as the PLC cache and WEC.
Okay.
We can decide whether we want to put that table in the motivation or the related work. I think earlier is better, but if we don't go into a lot of detail about PLC cache and WEC, and I'm sure there are others as well. The CFLRU is another one. The CFLRU does not avoid updates entirely, but it avoids evictions.
Yeah, because it evicts claim first, right?
Yeah, something like that. So that's another algorithm, but that's an algorithm for... I'm trying to think if they did design that algorithm for main memory or for SSD, and that's the part I'm not entirely sure about. But look at the CFLRU.
Okay. Okay, so after describing these algorithms,
you have to have a however paragraph, which doesn't start with a however, but that's basically the key purpose of the paragraph is to show what is lacking in the current solutions.
Exactly. Yeah, so I put this annotation here. Split it into description of the algorithms and shortcomings.
Yeah. And when you say description, it doesn't have to be like a significant description. You just talk about key properties.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, a short one over. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So then I start talking about the solution that we propose, which is multi-mode adaptive replacement cache.
Yeah, I like that term. It should be multimodal though. Multimodal adaptive replacement cache.
Because it's no longer bimodal, right?
It's a state machine.
It's a state machine, so it's multimodal. And this new class of algorithm will work on top of the existing cache replacement policies to provide a mechanism to avoid unnecessary evictions to further improve performance.
Yeah.
And then we talk about, so why do we have several states? And that's what I wanted to say next. So the algorithm aims to identify different kind of workloads and act accordingly. And each workload will activate a different mode, will remain active until further changes in the workload are detected.
One of the things that could help you convince the reader very quickly that this is a good idea is to have a result summary plot in the introduction itself. Say, here's what LRU does, here's what ARC does, and use a metric that is simple, like cache updates, number of cache updates, right? Or something easy to understand. Cache updates may not be the best metric to showcase here. And then LARC, here's what LARC does, here's what MARC does.
We should talk about latency and cache updates, right? Like, if we say, like, okay, we have this latency comparable to ARC, which is this much,
mm-hmm.
or even it's better than ARC by this much,
yeah.
which is by now better.
Mm-hmm.
So we say, okay, so we have a better latency than mm-hmm. ARC, and we also reduce the number of cache updates by this much.
Yeah.
So we can say, like, okay, so we have a comparable performance, and then we also, aside from that, reduce mm-hmm. cache updates, which, will justify both performance and lifespan of the device.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
which is this last paragraph that...
Yeah, I think it will be useful for you to have that plot to support what you're saying. Kohler, do you have any comments so far?
No, but I think it's very helpful to put all the ideas in one place. I was kind of reading the paper, but I haven't finished it. I don't know. I like it, especially like the figure.
Figure one.
I think that's pretty cool. Yeah, I like it. I mean, it needs a couple of iterations of the paper, but I like it. I like the way it's coming up.
Okay. Yeah, I think that figure is one aspect of the one property or one state, describes one state, and I don't know if it should go up so early in the discussion, the figure one. I'm not entirely sure.
In the motivation section?
Yeah, there's more going on besides just this churning behavior, right?
Right, but I mean, like what I wanted to start with was the first talking about stability and what a stable workload is.
Hmm.
And then what churning is, because churning has to be on a stable workload, right? And then, so we start with this concept that at first the reader may think like, okay, so what is this all about? And then we introduce what are the properties of the workloads and how they does these properties affect ARC. And Lark, right?
Right.
And if we don't, I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, maybe we can add like an introductory paragraph just talking about like, okay, there's different kinds of workloads we are going to define nets, and each of these workloads have a different effects on cache algorithms that we.
When you say workloads, do you mean workloads or do you mean different characteristics of workloads?
It could be,
and workloads are dynamic. They could be stable, and then at later time they may not be stable, and they may be churning, and they may be streaming. So the same workload can go through all of these different states, right?
I would say it as, I mean, the way that I saw it in the beginning was like when I define a workload, it could be a simple workload, and a workload with one property, right? Like unique access workload is a stable workload, unstable workload, or something like that. And then you have a workload nowadays are dynamic, but they are composed workloads that have different. Are composed by different simple ones, right? And then it could be attributes or.
One thing which we could do is take a single real workload, one of the traces, and show how it moves through different states.
Okay.
And that could support your discussion of these different states of a workload.
Okay.
Could go into these different states, and you could say, okay, here's one workload where I see churning happening here, and I see working set change happening here. And I could use a different workload where I say, here's a streaming workload, and then here's a stable state workload with a fixed. So if you're able to annotate existing workloads with these properties, then what you're saying, it becomes more believable, right? Otherwise, it's just theory.
Okay.
And I'm not saying that we cannot sell this paper based on theory. I think it'll be easier for us to sell the paper if we have data to support the model.
Yeah. And
if you write this up, I think Stephen can probably help with sifting through the workloads, trying to identify these different... I think you know enough about the workloads that we have now to...
You have done it a lot, so... You can probably find one that's a good example.
Like one or two or three, whatever it takes. You say that here is workload A that has this property, and then it goes into a different state, and here's another workload B which has states D and E, and that sort of stuff. Right?
Okay. So one, at least one, that, like one that you can see it several things. The interesting one.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, like, for example, we recognize the different types of events on ARC.
Yeah, that one's interesting.
That would be cool. I mean, if you can... I mean, that was hard to read. So,
it's an interesting thing to look at.
But maybe that, something like that would be, like, easy if we can set up different things for the colors and stuff like that. Maybe we can do it for something... Nah. I don't know. Like, something like that. We just need to talk about it more.
Yeah.
Introducing that, that supports...
And, I mean, my initial thinking here is that we just have an access number on the x-axis and the logical block address on the y-axis. So if you have a streaming access, you'll see a line with a certain slope. And then if you have a steady state, you have a range of addresses that are repeated, right? That may be more difficult to see in a plot like this, but it could, you know, that could be a start for us.
It could be.
Okay, so the LBAs and the number of unique accesses, right? That's the one that you're referring to?
So on the x-axis you have accesses, on the y-axis you have LBA. Access ID, LBA. So if access mm-hmm. X goes to LBA Y, then you have a point at x comma y.
Also, you see like clusters or.
These are plots that we already have.
The one that made me think about it was the one that says number of accesses and then the number of unique accesses so far. So you could see a slope.
Ah, yes.
When you have a number of unique accesses you have a change in workloads.
And if you have like a horizontal line.
Then it's a stable state and then...
That's another possibility.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where it was brought to mind.
And where do we see churning? That sort of stuff. Like, is there churning? Right? If the number of... the stable number of axes is small, then everything fits in the cache. But if it's large and it's stable, then there could be churning behavior because the number of unique items is more than the size of the cache. Right, so that sort of stuff. So I would let Stephen be creative here to how to best represent or instantiate the model that we are describing.
Okay, awesome. Okay, so once we introduce this data that supports the cache workload behavior, we define what a stability is, what a churning, while describing this data, right?
So do you have a state machine somewhere?
No, I don't have a state machine yet.
So do you have it in your head?
I have it in my head, and it's been written down, and it's also implemented.
Okay, so... The reason I'm asking is that those are the states that you need to put in the table.
Right. Yes. I agree.
So you have a table somewhere, right? No, you don't have a table.
Not in here.
Okay.
I mean, I just haven't added to the LaTeX.
Okay. So does the state machine replace the table, or the table is at a different granularity and the state machine is at a different granularity?
So.
Or they complement each other.
Yeah, I think they complement each other in the sense that so with the state machine, the problem with the state machine or making a graph like that, it is like explaining what the transitions are and what are the conditions mm-hmm. for like the cost from moving from one state to the other.
Yeah.
So the reason why I thought the table, having a separate table that just describes MARC and all the... Like the table that we built, conditions that are met, and then action, what happens, and which one did you end up, which one did you start?
Yeah, and right, there was this other table that we had in mind to say, okay, these are the algorithms, these are the states, and which algorithm handles which state.
Right.
So that's just like a much simpler table.
Yes.
Then a table that tells actions.
Right, but when I describe MARC,
Yeah.
It would be good to have this table that just explains the state machine. Because if I have a drawing of a state machine, it's going to be hard for me to explain how are the conditions for a transition met. Mm. I will have to write it down on the paper, which, I mean, I could just
put it on my table. Are you using Xfig or something else for to draw the state machine?
I haven't. I don't know what
actually. I would recommend using PowerPoint.
Just PowerPoint, okay.
Yeah, just recommend using PowerPoint because in the end you will have to draw it in PowerPoint anyway when you present the work. So you just create a slide and include it in your LaTeX file.
Okay,
as an image.
Okay. Perfect.
Cooler, do you have an alternate suggestion how, you know, you've done this many times yourself? What would you recommend?
Actually, I was focusing on something else.
Okay.
The discussion. I was reading the introduction and I had some suggestions, but we can go to this after.
Okay. Okay, the quick question here is that for figures, what is your recommended tool?
Now I'll just use PowerPoint and get over with it for me.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, I would have used, whatever Luis is using.
Whatever Luis is using?
Yeah.
That's funny.
He's always up to date with the latest tools. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
So Luis, so your Luis was my Leo. So Leo is the one that gets me to the other stuff.
No, I just don't waste time on figures. I used to make them really pretty, but now I just don't care. Too much waste of time.
Yeah, I mean, in PowerPoint you can do lots of interesting, nice looking things. It's just that the quality quality of the graphic is not perfect.
Yeah.
Because the resolution of the fonts are not as well designed as LaTeX fonts, for instance.
Oh, something I found, which is what I used for I don't remember what paper recently. There is an SVG online editor from Google.
Okay.
And it works pretty cool, pretty okay. And SVG is vector based, so you can create PDFs, perfect PDFs from it.
The only thing is that if you want to include it in PowerPoint for animations, is it easy? Eventually,
no.
If you want to do a slideshow.
Yeah. No. So for PowerPoint, I use from Mac, from Apple Impress, and that's also vector based and. Looks okay.
And that can be included into PowerPoint and animated?
Yeah. Well, I mean, no, it will be whatever Impress, Apple Impress format. But then if you export it to PowerPoint, you will try to do the right thing, but it's always messed up.
Yeah, I think it's too much trouble.
So
just use PowerPoint. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so I'll use PowerPoint.
You'll save a lot of time because eventually you'll present it and then you have to animate these things and then it's much easier.
And I will already have it done.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Kohler, do you want to tell us what the comments you had in the motivation?
Yeah, I was reading the intro.
Intro, sorry. Yeah.
The intro is saying that, you know, for instance, like you and I have this problem and there is some details about the problem, but it doesn't feel like it's a serious, real problem. So, I don't know, some papers do this, like they have this very simple, striking data that says there is this real problem and they just leave it like that. So you leave the paper with the feeling that there is something, I mean, serious, a serious real problem. And I was thinking of how to make the intro have that feeling and if we have that data in the first place. So it's very simple to explain, but a real problem.
So would you recommend like adding extra data to make this remark or
well, when you're saying Elaru and I have a problem,
okay,
it might be nice to have data to prove it at the beginning and make it very simple. Not even explain why the problem exists, unless that's very interesting. But just showing that, for instance, people have been doing this and they have been wasting money on this or resources or bandwidth or whatever. And
okay. Well, maybe.
But I mean, but that's just like a different kind of flavor of introduction that I kind of like. But it doesn't have to be that way.
The one thing that I was suggesting to Santana is to have a summary evaluation slide. A chart, actually, which shows the performance of LRU and ARC versus our algorithm, and maybe LARC as well.
Okay, and yeah.
And that doesn't give you data about the problem. It gives you data as to the consequences of the problem.
I see.
So it's okay if you deal with the problem. Here's what you can get. Now. The data there is a little bit questionable because it's not clear whether the benefits that our algorithm has were due to that specific problem or something else.
Right.
Right?
So, yeah, I was thinking more in terms of, for example, most replacement algorithms have been focusing on heat, right?
Yeah.
So you can say something like, ARC is great for optimizing heat, but if now we took a look at something else, let's say evictions or the traffic from the cache to the backend store, whatever, something like, if you focus on that metric, then things look completely different. There's not that ARC really sucks on doing this. If you did this with this very simple, different algorithm, and it doesn't have to be our algorithm, just something very simple, you will have this huge difference in this metric. Well, but like, I guess that would be the same, right, as showing the results of our algorithm. Yeah, I don't know. I don't have a clear.
I think there are two pieces here. One is that while ARC focuses on hits, improving hit rate, it also has a limitation which can affect hit rate negatively. And which is that every time there is a miss, it must update the cache. And that can affect ARC hit rate negatively because when you update the cache to insert an item, you potentially evict an item which may be more important.
Right.
So that's kind of this side effect of being an algorithm for a data path cache, which always does cache updates.
Yes.
Did you read the DIP paper by any chance?
No. Okay,
so CFLRU DIP, read those papers. I think it's important. Because the DIP paper talks about this specific problem, which is the cache update problem, and how it affects algorithms such as LRU, for instance. LRU will replace the least recently used and put this new item in the most recently used position. So suddenly giving this item a lot more importance than every other item in the cache. And if it's a streaming access, it's completely the wrong thing to do to evict an item that potentially is much more important than this one-time access. Right? So that's the other issue with the caching algorithms that are designed for data path caches. They always do cache update. Kohler, do you have any comments about that?
I was thinking that say that you think that the solution is fast, so they may have to have something like people refer to as steering, where you move data around very frequently, right?
You populate the cache infrequently? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Well, for data path caches, that's not an option because you always insert into the cache.
You're talking about misses resulting in an immediate fetching of the data.
Yes,
right?
And putting it into the cache, updating the cache.
Okay.
Because that's what the conventional caching algorithms do. So to use ARC as is for non-data path caches, which is what we are saying these caches are, would have this exact same problem that you would need to update every time there is a miss. And that update may evict a more important item. And this affects hit rate. So do we have numbers of hit rates for these workloads? Do we do better or do we do pretty much the same as ARC?
In the MSR Cambridge traces, so we do, in hit rate, we do a bit worse than ARC.
We do worse than ARC.
But as the size of the cache increases, the difference becomes smaller.
Okay.
We do much better in hit rate than ARC.
Hmm.
Then for FIU traces, we have a better hit rate than ARC,
mm-hmm.
a much better hit rate.
Hmm.
Both LARC and SARC, MARC has better hit rate.
Okay.
So it depends on the workload.
Hmm. By the way, there is a marking algorithm. this reminded me of this MARC algorithm, but that's MARK. And I just wanted to make sure that we don't step on that other algorithm.
Yeah.
So just look into that more. Whether it's for caching or not, I'm not entirely sure. And if that is the case, you might have to rethink this acronym again.
Okay. I've been trying hard.
No, multimodal, I see why you say that, multimodal. But... at the same time, yeah, I mean, it's okay for a submission. You might get a reviewer comment saying that, oh, you need to change your acronym because that's already this other algorithm that's already very well known, and then your algorithm is going to be confused with that algorithm.
That's true.
Right. So at this point, I don't have a better suggestion than to just do a summary of results in the introduction to say, okay, if you can deal with all these problems as we do, then you could hope for these performance improvements.
Okay.
And durability improvements.
Okay.
So one for performance, one for durability. Have two charts.
Okay.
And stick it in the intro itself.
Okay.
And those two charts should be referred to in the paragraph that introduces the MARC algorithm.
Oh, okay.
At the end.
I thought it was on this other paragraph, but I thought, like, we implemented this and we got these results.
Yeah, but that's a more comprehensive summary than what's... Maybe it's a summary of those two charts and a little bit more, because we might have some additional data, right?
Okay.
Than just these two charts. The other thing is, I remember we talked about increasing the cache size further to 100%. I would recommend running experiments to get that data.
So for the... Okay, I will do that.
We have 0 to 25. We have 5 to 25%, right?
Yes. So what I'm doing right now, running actually right now, is from 1% to 5%. Because the latency is better than ARC
yeah.
in general,
mm.
but our latency is better than LARC, especially for small caches.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to see what happened when you go from 1% to 5% one
okay.
by one.
Okay, that's great.
And see if we can, what happens if we improve further and the difference becomes larger and significant, what is happening there that we're doing better. I mean, I think that would be an awesome argument as well.
Yeah, I agree. So, yes, I think it's since you have access to the machine, a machine is sitting idle, it doesn't hurt to just get all the data.
Yeah.
And keep it handy, and we can choose to present a subset of it or all of it.
Okay. So when you want me to do this for larger sizes than 25%, what intervals would you recommend? Like from 35, 45, 55?
Well, I would say, go up 5, 5, 5, just like you're doing right now from 5 to 25.
Okay.
35, 40, 30, 35, 40. And at some point, I think you'll get to a point where all the performance is the same across all the algorithms.
Right, because we have the size.
And then you can
the...
stop at that point, effectively.
Okay. So
I don't know if some of the other metrics get affected, though.
So I'll get the next 5 points. I'll get
30,
35, 40, 45, 50.
And then we can decide what to do next after that.
Okay. That sounds good. Yeah, I can get that in a day.
Yeah, perfect. Yes. I'm not saying that we should show all those points, but it's good to have it, and we may be able to use it.
Yeah. I'm getting new data and stuff. What else? I'm still working on the motivation.
Okay, so tell us about the motivation quickly.
We're first talking about introducing data that supports the cache workload behavior to then be able and say, okay, define all these different behaviors that we look at in our data.
Yeah.
And then define what a stability is, which is we want to define it as a set period of time in which the working set access frequency remains almost the same as in the previous period.
So the first note that I see here mention again the importance of designing algorithms for SSDs.
Yeah, this is optional.
That's optional. Okay.
And I will have to give it another angle, which I don't have right now, so I wasn't talking about it.
and then you cannot define stability right away. You have to give some preamble to say, here are the different properties or characteristics of workloads, right? And then you talk about each of these.
So we can talk about that. We can start by showing the figure, right? The figure that we just talked about with the LBAs and the unique access describe that figure and say, like, okay, so we can see that during the execution of this workload, we see different things are happening, and we want to define each of these behaviors. So what do we see when we see this? What do we see when we see that? And then we can say, like,
I think that's a good way to start. So start with some data which points to these characteristics, and then formally define these characteristics.
Exactly. That's the idea that I just got.
Perfect. It helps.
So once we introduce this data, we define what a stability is, and then we define what churning is, and we introduce a figure for churning. And
so you have streaming as well, and transition.
Yes.
So stability, churning, streaming, and transition. Are we missing anything?
Streaming, no. Unique access, right?
Yeah. Streaming. Yeah, actually, non... what is that?
Unique access workloads.
Unique access workloads.
Right, because it can be random access or streaming.
Be random or streaming, and it has the same effect.
It has the same effect.
From a caching standpoint.
Exactly.
Actually, random, there could be... I guess there could be reuse when you have random... It's just that the reuse distances are going to be... No, forget about it. Let's keep them in the same category. Streaming and random as unique access. So you have churning, stable churning, stable and not churning.
Hello. Yes. Hello.
Sorry. I thought the other guys were here already.
They're not, and we'll need just a few more minutes and we'll be done. Thanks, Daniel. Okay, so what are the characteristics?
So we have we have a stability, churning, unstable, unique access workloads,
mm-hmm.
and that's it.
Those and five. Transition?
Yeah, that's unstable, right?
Oh, unstable, okay.
So then I would leave the definition of churning to the end to later to introduce it more extensively with this figure.
Mm-hmm.
But we already talked about it in here a little bit. So after defining these things, how ARC, how the algorithms that we talked about in the introduction would react to each of these to each of these workloads, and so we introduced this table and we talked about it and we developed it a little bit.
Okay. Yes.
So I would say like, okay, so when we're talking about this, we introduce the table and we start talking about ARC. So we say, okay, so how ARC reacts to each of these workloads and what are the its shortcomings. So and here I was going to talk about what Ricardo was saying, that are very effective design for hit rating data path caches. But it always does eviction, so reduces the durability of the device, and that items evicted could be more beneficial for the cache performance. And this is when we talk about the churning
mm-hmm.
workload in the table, right?
Yeah.
And then we introduce a workload in which churning will affect the performance of ARC,
mm-hmm.
and create a graph that shows the property in which ARC is churning and describe it. And this is using the workload generator that Steven is going to work in.
Yeah. Okay, so we are almost out of time, and I want Steven to also tell us what's going on with the workload generator. How's that going?
No, I'm still getting that set up. I only mostly started running these scripts for getting the one-day MSR trace information as
mm-hmm.
we talked about on Tuesday. So I'm having that one start and get back to you not next Tuesday, but
mm-hmm.
Next meeting. But I'm still working on the workload generator, obviously.
Okay. So, is the workload generator needs to be informed with the kinds of properties that are being defined here?
Yeah, I've been trying to think about how to do that. So.
And I think it would be important for you guys to talk more so that you can define these properties more formally, and that it's much easier for Steven to generate the workload.
Okay.
To write the workload generator.
Okay.
And I think a good time for you guys to do some of this work is actually at FAST. When you have free times during FAST, you could brainstorm quite a bit because you'll be getting a lot of new ideas.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just by listening to all the presentations.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why I like to go to these conferences, because it activates different parts of your thought process. Okay, so we have to wrap up here. I see... Ricardo, that you have a section 3, which is a lot more detailed. But is this? One challenge here would be that the story needs to be connected.
Oh yeah, no, like I haven't started working on the design part yet. I need to edit this to make it.
You need to put a state machine in there somewhere.
Right. No, this is an old version.
Okay.
So this needs to be edited completely.
Okay.
So it you know, copes well with the story that I'm telling.
Okay, so I guess for the next version of this draft, I think it would be important to have the summary of results table and the charts in the introduction, the table.
The tables for the workloads and the...
Okay. Properties and solutions.
Okay.
And the state machine.
Okay.
Right, so once you have some of those figured out, it'll be easier for Steven also to write his workload generator.
Okay.
Know exactly what. Right? And once we have those, then we can figure out a structure for the design section as well.
Okay.
So okay. Here's this for you.
Thank you.
So, Kohler, if you have any other comments as you're reading the draft, please send those over to Santana.
No, something I was supposed to meet with Santana.
Yes.
In this afternoon to discuss the module. I wasn't able to. So I think it's easier if we just set up a meeting. Like, I guess now we could do it. Let's say Monday afternoon, anytime.
Well, we are going to be away at FAST the whole of next week.
Oh, in this week already? Okay. Okay, and today we have the other presentation, right?
Yeah, at 3:30. But Tanya, is doing another practice.
If you want to meet after that, that's...
Yeah, that's perfect.
I cannot after. Before that, it's fine with me.
I got a meeting.
So you have 1 to 2 o'clock.
1 to 2 o'clock, yeah.
So 2 o'clock, 2, 3, 3 o'clock, you're available.
Sure. Let's do it.
If you want, we can meet.
Yes. I think it's important for us to start talking about this. Okay. I mean, I'm writing the proposal right now, but I mean, yeah, it's important.
I mean, it depends on you, really. Another thing we can do also is if you want, you can take a look at the code and ask me questions. By phone, email, I don't know, it really depends on you.
I would like to talk about it. At least to give an overview, and then I'm going to start looking at it, and I'm going to have a bunch of questions.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I mean, Kohler, if you can just describe the code to Santana briefly, I think it'll help him do his review more efficiently.
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay.
Awesome.
Okay. Tuesday.
Two.
2 o'clock.
Yeah. So, should I expect your call or I call you?
Sure. I think I have your cell phone number. Should I call you on your cell phone?
I have yours, so I can. I'll send by email now.
Okay. Great. Yes, I'll call you then.
Okay. Okay. Awesome. Cool.
Okay, see you later. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. The proposal. Roger, so should we write the proposal separately?